8 o'clock hour on your home of the Cowboys. Brian brought us from Oxnard at 8:40. Nick Harris, DallasCowboys.com. Final hour of the show. It's Sean and Bobby, our Cowboys insider. And joining us now on the D&M Leasing Hotline from the NFL Network is insider extraordinaire Ian Rappaport on DFW Sports Station. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Doing well. Did you enjoy your quick visit in Oxnard? What stood out to you?
I did enjoy my visit, actually. I think a couple things stood out to me. You know, there's so much made. Obviously, there's the storylines of Dak and CD, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But, there was so much made of the Cowboys in free agency. And obviously what they did, and most importantly what they didn't do and all that. And the only way that really works is if you have younger players, second-year players, or rookies who are going to come in and play some real roles. And I think the Cowboys are going to have a bunch of young players who are really talented coming and play. And, you know, might that lead to some growing pains, especially in the offensive line early? Maybe. But the amount of young players that I think they are excited about and are going to count on is a really, really good sign. And obviously, you guys know this is a team that has drafted very well. So I think that stood out to me. And then of course there was the Dak and CD situations, which are, right in the forefront.
I want to ask a nerdy question, behind the scenes as a reporter.
Okay.
How many times can you check in with your sources without annoying them when it comes to something like this? Is it daily? Is it understood it's going to be daily? Like, how do you space out texting or calling your sources for the very latest every damn day or week on these contracts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. And that's, what I spend a lot of my time doing is just being like, all right, how annoying am I going to be and all that. But I would say, for me, one is you try not to always ask. Sometimes you try to give. You try to have information where you can say, hey, this is going on either in the landscape of the contracts or around the league, or just provide rather than always take. That's something I try to do. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing is my job is sort of predisposes me to be generally annoying. And if you're upfront and transparent about anything, then I think people will understand. So the people I speak to, the people I call, the people I check in with, they know that a big part of my job is going to be making sure that you're kept abreast of everything that's going on. So being a little bit annoying is essentially okay.
How difficult is it to decipher a message someone's trying to put out there versus it being like 100% truth with your name next to it if you relay and report it?
I would say there's probably not as much of that as people think. Like, I don't get a lot of people who say, like, all right, I'm going to tell you this and only this, and I want you to report it. And then it's kind of like a one-sided, slanted thing, and then I just go out and report it. Like, that doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason that doesn't happen is because in today's world, if I were to go out and say something, the player could just tweet, like, well, actually, that's wrong. Or the team could literally put out a statement and say, that's wrong. So, like, I don't really do that anyway, but it's just not user-friendly at all because, it doesn't help the fans. It doesn't actually really help the person who's putting out a message that's not accurate, and it certainly doesn't help me.
Ian Rappaport joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, Ian, so obviously they've got a lot of expiring deals, quarterback, mm-hmm. receiver, head coach. Specifically, I'm curious, as they go through these negotiations, do you think the Cowboys view it like McCarthy and Dak, their fates are tied together? Like, are they either both coming back or both depart, or do you think they view them as individual cases?
So I actually wondered for a long time this offseason if Dak and McCarthy were viewed together because, neither had an extension. There really hadn't been talks. And so I was like, maybe it's a package deal. I don't think so anymore because there have not been, to my knowledge, any negotiations with Mike McCarthy, but there have been negotiations with Dak. There have been, I would say, relatively positive negotiations. They have made multiple offers, and I think they would like to get something done. I don't get the same sense with McCarthy, so I would say now I view them not together.
Which do you think is a better characterization, just from your understanding of how the Dak negotiations have gone, which is a better characterization of his negotiations right now, that the Cowboys are trying to figure out how to make the money work, or that they have a disagreement with what Dak is worth?
I don't really view it like what quarterbacks are worth, because that doesn't really exist anymore. It's crazy the way the quarterback market has gone. Like, nobody says anymore, you know, like, well, is Trevor Lawrence really worth 55? It's like, based on what he's done on the field, maybe not. That's where the market is. Yeah. You know, Jordan Love played 7 great games. Is he worth 55 also? It's like, well, it's what he's going to get. So to me, it's really a question of leverage rather than worth, because Dak's leverage is he could just not do a deal. He could just say, hey guys, I'm good. Like, I'm going to go into the season. I'm going to play it out. And assuming he plays as he's played basically every season for the last like 10 years or whatever it is. Last year he was playing at an MVP level. Like, you know, he'll get over 60 by a bunch in free agency. He'll be the biggest free agent we've ever seen. So that's his leverage. I view it more like that rather than overall talent and like what he's actually worth. It's really just like, how much is Dak going to use his leverage, and how much are the Cowboys going to sort of bow to that?
So what do you think are the current holdups right now in the two deals?
I would say, let's start with CD. I don't think there's a disagreement on how much he's worth. I think there's a, you know, essential understanding of he is an excellent receiver and probably will get paid as the second highest receiver in the NFL. I think they're okay there. Now, there's a lot of other parts of the deal. There's the guaranteed money, which is incredibly important. There's the length of the deal, which I don't, you know, I think they're, you know, sort of okay there, whatever it ends up being. But I think the other issue is, you know, you have Brandon Ayuk, who's a very good receiver, laying out there. If Brandon Ayuk gets $32 million, let's say from the 49ers, which I don't think he's going to get, but let's just say, then that probably changes what CD is going to ask for. So I think the holdup on CD, if that's what you want to call it, is that the landscape is not fully formed yet. Like, because, you know, if the 49ers go, all right, forget it, we're just going to trade him, and Brandon Ayuk gets something unforeseen, and CD already took a deal, like, that's not good for him. So I think the interrelating receiver deals probably affect everything. As far as Dak goes, I just think they haven't gotten there yet. You know, like, they've made some proposals. It sounds like they were good faith and not, you know, not offensive, like, not embarrassing. Like, no one's insulted. They just haven't gotten there yet.
Talking with Ian Rapport, NFL Network insider. You can also see Ian on the Insiders Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Central on NFL Network. Ian, you know, going back to the McCarthy discussion, how you mentioned, to your knowledge, there haven't been negotiations yet. Mm-hmm. How close do you think it was at the end of the season, or what kind of real evaluation was going on? Do you think it was something where Jerry always felt like McCarthy was coming back and it was much ado about nothing? Or do you think there was a genuine question about, do we need to make a change here?
I felt to me like a genuine discussion. I think it was the right move to bring him back. I really do.
Why do you think that?
So mostly because of my general philosophy, right? And I don't know that generally it relates specific to the Cowboys, but to me, the product you put on the field is basically the regular season, right? The playoffs are almost in a weird way, a different animal. You do everything you can. You get in the playoffs, and sometimes it's weird, and sometimes there are upsets, and hopefully you're as prepared as possible, but sometimes it just doesn't work out, and everything was terrible for the Cowboys last year.
Yeah.
But I think it's so hard to build up a team that's so good to where you're in a point where you're, like, in control of everything in the playoffs, and I don't think it's fair to fire a coach for one loss, which is essentially what this would be. And I would also say, historically, when teams have fired coaches for, like, not being good enough in the playoffs, it has almost always been bad for them. You know, Marty Schottenheimer is the greatest example. But that's generally bad, because it's hard to build up a good team that's good enough to potentially go deep in the playoffs. Last year wasn't good enough. It's not good enough for anyone. It's not good enough for the Cowboys or McCarthy or anyone. but I didn't think one loss would be a fireable offense, and I'm glad it wasn't.
Ian, when we talk about all these deals, obviously Micah Parsons didn't show up to the OTA portion, which is, you know, not mandatory, came back from minicamp, but had made a point of saying while he was at minicamp, you know, some people are paid to be here for OTAs, I'm not. And so I was going to work on things my own. He's obviously a little bit further out from being completed. Is there anything there that would make you think they would try to get out in front of that one and address it this year potentially? Or is that something that they've got just too many things on their plate to deal with it right now?
Yeah, I think just too many things on the plate. And it sounds to me like everybody would like a deal. But I think if you're Micah Parsons and you have a good and he has a very, very good agent in David Mulugeta, you know, if you understand the landscape, waiting is fine. You know, his value is only going to increase. Like, I can feel pretty confident saying when Micah Parsons gets a deal, he's probably going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. So, like, just chill out and wait. And, like, there's almost nothing that could happen on the field this year that would take me off that. Same thing with Justin Jefferson last year. Like, even though he was injured last year with a hamstring and missed some games, like, he was always going to be the highest paid non-quarterback. I think Mike is the same, so waiting is really not that bad.
You know, Ian, you use the word wait, and many of us are furious and don't understand and think that the Cowboys front office waits too long. Michael Lombardi came on, said, stupid notion, we're all overreacting, blah, blah, blah. You know how all these front offices operate. What do you think of that notion that Jerry's leaves cost him more money that he waits, you know, to fall?
I don't think it's a stupid notion. I think it's a good question. I talk about it, I mean, maybe not as much as you guys, but I talk about it plenty publicly. It's more of a philosophical thing for the Cowboys than anything else. And I think, you know, look, when you do deals early, you can get great deals for the team. Like, I think the Eagles got a really good deal with Devontae Smith. I think they really got a really good deal with Jordan Mailata both times. Doing early deals on your own players can really, really benefit you. Does not always help. The Eagles did an early deal for Josh Sweat, and then I thought they might cut him or trade him this year, and eventually he accepted a pay cut. Like, it doesn't always work out. And I think what the Cowboys want to do is, one, minimize the amount of dead money they have, which is basically money that they cannot spend, money that they are taxed on, charged with, but they cannot spend. And I think if they wait, it maybe helps them minimize the amount of dead money because you have more information and you're more sure. I also think that when you wait a little bit longer, might it cost you some dollars? Probably, definitely. But you're also doing deals that are probably more fair to your very good players. And so it creates less angst in the locker room and your players hate you less. I don't know if it's certainly not something everybody would do, but at least I think the reasoning is okay.
And what do you think Trey Lance's future is, whether it be in Dallas or just moving forward in the NFL?
I still think he's got some things to prove. I really do. I think if you didn't know where he was drafted, then you would say, you know, is this a guy in the roster bubble? And maybe he still is. I think that'll be an interesting decision. I'm not sure there's anything there where you would say, well, this guy's definitely making the team. This guy's definitely going to be the backup quarterback. I think there's still things out there for him to prove, and that's okay. He came out in that weird year, the COVID year, without a lot of information. Like, I think obviously it was a failed pick for the 49ers and for the Cowboys for a fourth-round pick. I thought it was a fine flyer. It's not going to cost them that much, and if he turns out to be nothing, like, okay. If he turns out to be their backup quarterback, then that's good value. But I don't think his story is fully written yet.
Ian, last one real quick. You tweeted yesterday, okay, the Cowboys appear to value the pressure being placed on key parts of their organization. What does that mean?
What that meant to me was Mike McCarthy is going – that was, I think, more geared toward McCarthy than anything else. McCarthy is going into a contract year in a way that coaches almost never do. And it's a lot of pressure. And they're basically saying, like, you need results or we're not going to fire you, but we'll probably move on. I think that's okay. I think that's something the Cowboys like. I think Jerry Jones is always like to tweak and prod and push and nudge or whatever, especially like the key parts of the organization and to get a better performance. And I think, you know, that's what it feels like with McCarthy while also limiting their downside. And I think they relish that. And we'll see if it works. or if it matters. But I don't think they shy away from that part of it.
You can follow Ian Rappaport on Twitter or X or whatever you call it now at this point. At Rapsheet.
Nobody calls it X.
No, I don't either. At Rapsheet. And you can see him on the Insiders on NFL Network Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Central. Ian, thank you so much. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
At Rapsheet, the great Ian Rappaport on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Let's react to that. And I wonder how many people would actually agree with Jerry Jones over that P word. And Bobby has the few reasons left to still watch the Rangers season. That's next on Sean and RJ.
So here's Seager with runners at second and third and one out. First pitch. Swinging a high fly ball to right field. McKinney's back on the track at the wall. He leaps out of here. A three-run home run for Corey Seager. His second home run of the ball game, and the Rangers lead 4-0.
Sandman with the call, Jared Sandler, and all the runs were scored in the first four innings. The Rangers put up four of them, thanks to Corey Seager with two bombs. They still only ended up with five hits, but they hang on to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 4-3 on this radio station. Good morning, Metroplex. It's Sean and Bobby. Choppy out for the week. Golfing in Michigan. We got Peyton and Carter in the back. What else happened in the West? The Astros still don't lose. They have won three straight, 9-1 last 10. They're five games up now on the Seattle Mariners, who tried to be aggressive during the trade deadline. It's not helping. The Rangers are 11 games back. Before we get to the reasons to still watch, I want to follow up. Do you have anything from Ian Rappaport, who just joined us, with new contract thoughts or info that you took from it?
I think it's encouraging to hear him talk about the CD stuff, that they kind of know that it's what they've got, and that just sounds like it's a matter of time to getting that one done. That's encouraging. But the other aspect of that, specifically when he said nothing offensive in the DAC negotiations yet, because I think we've wondered, has it gotten tense at any point, or has there been any sort of...
You said the last negotiation, there was an offensive offer.
Yeah, it was offensive, and it pissed off Todd France, his agent. And so I think that was important to understand. All right, are they at least in the ballpark? And so to hear from Ian that nothing offensive has occurred yet, it's just they're not there yet, that makes it sound a little more, obviously not as inevitable as the CD one, but that makes it sound like Ian feels that this is something that will get worked out at some point. It's going to take some time. And Ian has a pretty good beat on Dak, I feel like, and what Dak's camp does and wants. And so I think that's something that if you're a Dak fan, that's encouraging. If you're a Dak hater, you might be punching air right now. That's what I kind of took.
I want to just follow up on the P word that I know Jerry Jones values. He has said it to us at the media party. And Ian Rappaport tweeted it yesterday, and that's pressure.
Oh, I was very confused.
This is a fascinating discussion to me and an idea. Jerry Jones likes Hard Knocks and the cameras out there, because he thinks that the pressure and all the attention will show who you really are and elevate your game. And the pressure of having to prove the contract, and you should get your extension, and you should get your money. Jerry believes, like he does in many things in life, he looks at that through an optimistic lens and view. So take yourself at your own job, right? Like, your company's just waiting to pay you. You got 6 months, 3 months left, and they haven't given you an extension or the final year. Like, okay, let's re-up. Here we go. And imagine if your boss is just thinking and says, I want to see how you perform under this. I think it's going to make you better. It's going to bring out even better production from you. And you're sitting there thinking, screw you. Reward me and pat me on the back and show that you care about the value that I bring. So those two different viewpoints to me are fascinating. Ding! But Jerry Jones, he views it like that. He views it as, you know, pressure makes diamonds.
Yep, that's exactly it. They felt like, I know that internally when they had Garrett on that 1-year deal, that they felt like they were getting the results early. Like, they felt like this is something that he's bringing his best because we've put him in this situation. And they felt like it was the right play, and it had, you know, they had a real optimistic take on it. It turned sour so fast. And not just with Garrett, but with that entire locker room, just everybody kind of looking out for themselves. And when it started spiraling, it got out of control really fast. And that's what I'm surprised they didn't learn from, I guess, is that they didn't learn from that setup and how toxic it made everything. Now, maybe they don't feel like that's the reason it got toxic. Maybe they felt like personalities and a collection of people. There were other explanations for it. But, man, it went south really fast with that setup. And I'm surprised they would walk into this year with the same exact one of your star receiver is in the final year of his deal. The star quarterback is in the final year of his deal. The coach is in the final year of his deal. You've got another star player, Zeke in 2019, Micah now, who hasn't showed up for some stuff and is still 2 years away from his deal. Like, they're putting themselves in the same exact position.
To me, it creates resentment. Now, I don't blame him for not extending McCarthy. RJ does. He's like, just give the one fake year.
I just blame him for bringing him back.
Shut up.
No, I'm being dead serious. To me, it's, if you don't know about McCarthy by now, like,
What do you think of what Ian is saying? I know you're not allowed to play fantasy football. It's fantasy football. There's a reason why the regular season champ, never Peyton Russell, gets paid, because that's the true testament through 17 weeks of how good your team is. Not this one-off lucky flip of the coin thing. Now, where Ian was off a little bit, I think, it's not just judging him off the Green Bay game. We've had multiple playoff years. And as you always say, he was brought in to take the next step and to elevate and go farther than Jason Garrett could not go. That has not happened. But Ian is right. Like, got a really, really good team. Are you going to have a 12-win team that makes it two rounds further if you bring in the next person?
To me, it's though you don't know what your future looks like after this year. So if you don't know what it looks like after this year, your roster composition, everything else.
Well, they're going to have Dak, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons. So that's a good start.
For how much longer?
As long as their contracts are.
I still think this ends
all three are getting re-signed.
See, I disagree. I think 2 years from now, one of them's not here. I don't know which one. I would lean Micah, but I think two years from now,
why would Jerry Jones let Micah Parsons get out the door?
Because I think that there are certain financial cash-strapped limitations that they're going to run into with some of the guys that they've already paid and some of the guys they still have to pay. They're going.
When's the last big dog in their prime like that they've ever let out of here?
Byron Jones, probably. Okay.
Well, not even close in terms of Hall of Famer. Byron's a really good player.
They traded Amari.
Yeah. They had Lamb to replace.
Yep. And I mean, that
was the replacement plan in mind.
They're going to hit this. They're going to hit a decision point here in 2 years on Bland and Diggs, where they're going to, one of Bland or Diggs is not going to be here in a couple years, because that's just a number.
But neither
game.
Of those is a generational guy. I just can't see it. I don't think it'll ever.
No, happen. I mean, obviously it doesn't. It hasn't looked that way yet. But I mean, if Diggs continues to be the kind of takeaway artist that he is, if Bland continues to do some things, we might be talking about him that way in a few years. But they're going to have a decision to make on that front. I just think that these next couple of years are going to be very important for determining if you want to also pay Micah. Like, if you also want to be the one to give him that money.
All right. Rangers get that W. We came back with the Corey Seager home runs. The reasons that Bobby says you need to stick around, other than us just being the home of the baseball team.
I got three things here, and these are all meant to be optimistic. One of them might not sound so optimistic, but they are definitely, in my opinion, optimistic. Number one, it's the easy one. It's the return of Jacob DeGrom. When Jacob DeGrom gets back and is pitching, it was when he went out, when he got shut down, I don't think we thought they were going to be a World Series contender at that time. And even at that time, not thinking that there were a lot of optimism for a great run that season, it was still exciting every single time to turn on the TV and watch him. Yep. I'm going to want to turn on the TV and watch Jacob DeGrom pitch every time.
Agreed.
Because it's exciting. The things that he can do, the velocity, the movement on his pitches, the way that he just makes batters look silly. I love watching DeGrom pitch. And so I'm excited to see that return.
Chris Young says on G-Bag yesterday he will make a rehab start for AA Frisco on Thursday.
So there you go. You can get a preview. Go jump up to Frisco, the Dr. Pepper ballpark or whatever it's called at this point. Number two on this one, and this is the one that maybe sounds a little bit depressing and dejecting, but it's the farewell tour of Adolis Garcia. That to me is a good enough reason to watch. I go back to, and I know in the standing of franchise history, these are two very different players we're talking about. But in 2002, I could probably say my favorite athlete of all time is Pudge Rodriguez. I loved Pudge. And it was obvious going through the end of 2002 that Pudge was not coming back. And that last month, when that's a bad baseball team, I remember not spending enough time appreciating and watching, like, this is the last time I'm watching Pudge play baseball for the Rangers. Now, obviously, he came back years later, but in his prime, this is the end of watching my favorite player play for my favorite team. Adolis Garcia, everything he did during the World Series run, being the playoff hero that he is, some of the great moments that he's had, the swagger, the big-time hits. I would just say, as bad as things are and as good as he's played lately, he's smashing the cover off the ball over the last 2 to 3 weeks. I would say, even if things are going a little sideways, try to appreciate this finale from Adolis Garcia. Because when it's gone, I think you're going to feel like, man, maybe I didn't appreciate enough that time that he spent here. And I know he had his flaws, but man, I love that player. And so I would say that's a reason.
I think he'll always be remembered and appreciated for what he did against Houston.
He'll get a huge ovation the first time he comes back. The reality is he's probably gone. He's not coming back after this year is the likelihood. So I would say just take some time.
You all right there?
Yeah, I just bumped the bottom of the mic there. Take some time to appreciate this finale here that he seems to be playing really well in. And then number three, it's been a little quiet. We've talked about it some, and Chris Young referenced one of them yesterday. The Jack Leiter, Kumar Rocker, growth that we're seeing right now in the minor leagues is incredibly exciting. And Leiter's going to be coming up here soon. Rocker, maybe not, but Rocker could be up by the end of the year as well. Jack Leiter since June 18th, Sean, 31 innings pitched, 47 strikeouts, two home runs allowed in 31 innings. His ERA is 2.90. He's giving up an OPS of 6.57. He has been nails down at AAA. And then Kumar Rocker, since he came back up in after the All-Star break, his last four starts for Frisco since he got pulled up to AA. In four starts, 15 innings pitched, 21 strikeouts to two walks, six hits allowed, no home runs. His ERA is 0.60.
Ooh. Chris Young says he expects Leiter to return relatively soon. May start coming out of the bullpen. That was yesterday on the G-Bag Nation, where the G-Bag of the day currently resides. The sarcastic, smartass, horrible impressionist, Brian Broaddus from Oxnard on the home of the Cowboys. Next, the great Bobby Belt.
You ruined the morning show.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
It is below the belt, but it's not any below the belt. This is a special one, Sean, because we welcome the reigning G-Bag of the Day champion live from Oxnard, Brian Broaddus. Yeah, let's listen to what won him G-Bag of the Day. Sean, where did you come down after listening to our conversation?
I thought that...
This is going to be fun. I was thinking you two need to fight more on these shows.
No, I was hoping the
two
fight
idiots
was,
going at it. I was not hoping, very strong.
I was hoping the fight was worse. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad.
You were hoping that you'd have to talk to me and go, "Hey, I'm thinking about posting this. What do you think? What do you think? No, I'm thinking about for the ratings here."
Yeah.
If you and Bobby would like, if you met with each other and like hit each other in the face, that would be better. I'm cooking a brisket. What do you think?
Oh,
I'm using my thermopin and some foil.
Send this over for G-Bag of the Day.
I'm making a boat out of the foil. I'm making beef tallow while I'm doing it.
Wow.
Use the beef tallow from some beef stroganoff I'm thinking about later. Who you liking at quarterback, Broaddus? I hate everybody you like anyway. Sometimes you're a little bitch when it comes to this stuff.
We welcome the G-bag of the day, Brian Broaddus, who you cut Sean deep. Not since Trayvon Diggs jumped in his DMs and said, "You weird for that," has Sean felt so personally attacked.
You know what? I love you, Sean. I really, really do. Everybody's like, "Man, you made that really personal." And I'm like, "Well, that's how we act. Balls.
We go aggressive.
We go really aggressive there." That but too. No, and like everyone's like, "Gosh, dang, why do you? Man, that was pretty harsh. You can tell that you really don't like Sean." And I'm like, "You guys don't know the half of it here." Yeah. But no, I
prefer to bust balls and slightly get offended than patty cake. You know how I am.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking that.
You got a lot of feedback on that, though. You got a lot of props and praise all damn day long. I was seeing all that praise for you.
You know what? It was, I went into character, but I just started thinking about all those conversations that you and I had. Yeah. And I didn't mean to bring them all up. I'm sorry. I did that on the air.
And
but,
I said, you know what? I said earlier, I said, you know, after Bobby, who hits me up the most, and I talk ratings with the most in this damn building, is this fool right there. Fool. And then for ratings.
Nobody cares. More, yeah, you and I care more about this than anybody. We take this S personal right now. Yes. We really do.
Yes, and then in terms of doing anything for ratings, I said we're not the show blending up cottage cheese and pepperoni in order to do that. So keep that in mind. But all love. Don't even have to explain it. That's the way brothers
act. Look, you should be concerned if I'm not busting your balls. Because if I'm not, that means I don't like you. Yep. I don't want you to feel like you're part of the club. That's the whole idea. Brian, you said something really interesting last night on Love of the Star while we were recording. Where we were talking about how the Cowboys are going to cut this down, what their tackle depth looks like, and you had an interesting note about TJ Bass.
Yeah, we were going through the mock game yesterday, and, you know, the guys line up at different spots and things like that, and you're just kind of, you know, I'm just watching the practice. I mean, they're letting us watch, so I'm going to report what I see. But they were running TJ Bass with the first offense some at the tackle spot. They were filling him in, so he was not only was he, you know, he normally plays guard for you, but they were working him a little bit at tackle, and they might be a little bit concerned about their tackle depth going in. Maybe they don't feel like, well, okay, we've got let's go, you know, you've got the potential of Ball, who actually has had a really good camp playing guard, and, you know, the tackle spot, I mean, he survived it out there in that Raiders game the other day. But they might be thinking about, okay, who else can we cross train? And TJ Bass has played tackle at Oregon. So, this might be something that they're looking towards in the future of maybe continue to work with him and kind of see. Or they might be trying to think about how they're going to get through this game on Saturday, because now you're to the point where they had to play, well, let's go the whole game at right tackle. So maybe they're thinking about, well, is there somebody else that we can put outside and maybe help and get us through this game?
Brian Broaddus joins us here, and Brian Broaddus is brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. Brian, I was thinking about this last night a little bit. I'm going to set the over-under at 2.5. 2.5 is the number. Over-under on the number of players that will be on this roster for week one that are not here right now.
I think you would say, I would say the, man, I was going to put it at 2. So you went 2.5, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll go the under on that. I think they're looking at guys. I think they're clearly looking at some players here. I think they're clearly looking at some positions. I just appreciate the fact that they were watching their team here the last 4 weeks, and they just didn't sit here and stand pat. You know, I mean, you understand what they had to do with the Sam Williams injury. But, you know, for them to add defensive tackles, for them to add corners, for them to add edges, you know, linebackers, they really were trying to help their team the best they could. And it wasn't just guys like off the street. It was like veteran guys that have had experience playing. Sometimes you get the, oh, well, let's go get this guy who has no experience, this, that, and the other. And no, they went for guys that have actually played in games. So I give them a little bit of a, I give them some credit, but they're definitely hunting some positions here.
Brian Broaddus here on the D&M Leasing Hotline, 105 through the Fan. The observations of Mike Zimmer, his defense, his differences. What has jumped out to you with Zim?
I really do appreciate how he's allowed Al Harris to grow as a coach. And Al handles the secondary, and Al's done a really nice job with the secondary. You could see the buy-in. The young guys, they're not far from being perfect. We all understand that. But, for them to now get Diggs back, Bland, these safeties, I mean, there's some buy-in from these guys. And the young guys are battling for spots. That's a position I think that's still open, the cornerback spot, maybe that last cornerback spot. But I've been real impressed with Mike allowing him to grow as a coach. The buy-in from the players has been really, really cool to see. You talk to the offensive players and coaches at camp, they'll tell you all the disguise and all that stuff is real. It's made Dak and Cooper Rush and Trey Lance have to really work during practice to try and find guys, that are open. So I just feel like that Mike is not going to – what we saw in the Green Bay game was really unfortunate, and maybe it was a one-off, but there was a lot of busts, and there was a lot of guys running open, and there were a lot of problems. I was encouraging the other day, even though it was a big run during the game, they had a deal where Rodgers, the nose, he fills, Leofau fills, and then you get, the over-the-top linebacker, and if the over-the-top linebacker got there, then, it's going to be a gain of one or two. And I was sitting there thinking, I was thinking Willie Harvey. If Willie Harvey gets there, it's a gain of one or two. And I was thinking, okay, that's going to look good when you get Overshown in there, or Clark in there, or Kendricks in there. You talk about run defense. That seems to be on everybody's mind. How's Dallas going to play run defense? You better buckle up in week one. You're going to find out real quick how you're going to play run defense with that crew you're about to play. So just the attention to detail, the allowing the coaches, the growth of some of these coaches, I think is what I've really, really taken from this training camp.
Good answer. Is he barking as much as we all heard?
Not at all. Not at all. It's Jeff Zagina's the guy, the defensive line coach. He's the one that gets in everybody's face. It's funny with Mike. I know everybody came in here thinking that we were going to hear a lot of F-bombs, from across the field and stuff. It really hasn't been that way. When they make a mistake, usually if it happens in the secondary, him and Al Harris will walk over to whoever it is and they'll kind of talk it through. But there's no – now, we'll get to regular season and see what happens. Mike is on the sidelines. Remember Dan Quinn was upstairs. So I'm sure we'll have the camera on Mike in weeks one, two, three, maybe the whole season if something were to happen. I'm sure Mike will do what he has to do to get him going the right direction.
Is Overshown okay?
Yeah, they're talking about a bruise here is what we're dealing with, and on his leg. So that's something that he's trying to kind of work through right now. Him, Clark, he's dealing with a little bit of a sprained knee. Hopefully all these things will be okay. They need those kids to play. They don't need to get it going to the season, not being healthy at linebacker. That was one of the things last year I think that really kind of held them back in some ways. They need all these guys to be available and be ready to play. But, we'll see. Like I said, those guys, when we were doing mock game yesterday, were with Britt Brown, on the courts doing their work.
Brian, when you look at going to get a running back for this roster or potentially another defensive lineman, if you're talking about going out into the trade market to get one instead of the waiver wire, you're either going to have to trade away some depth or you're going to have to trade away a draft pick. Which would you be more willing to part with to go get that running back or that defensive tackle? Would you rather part with a TJ Bass or potentially a fifth round pick?
Well, I kind of feel like I'm going to need TJ Bass, and I'm not thinking about TJ Bass like I talked about earlier in the segment where, he's going to play tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about TJ Bass if something happens. I don't think they're very deep at offensive tackle. So my ace in the hole, and I know people hate when I say this, is that the potential to move Tyler Smith from guard to tackle is always something that you could play with. And then so I'm going to need TJ Bass to be a starter there. BB, somebody's got to be that guy that's going to play. So I worry about giving up offensive line depth. If somebody wants one of these receivers – or somebody wants, maybe one of these safeties, I would consider that. But I don't really want to give up much. If I have to give up a compensatory five And most of these general managers are former scouts. So they kind of like give me picks kind of guys. They don't think about the big picture always with just the player. You know, how can the player help me now? They're like, oh, give me the fifth round pick so, you know, I can look really smart in, you know, in April. So if you can get away with giving away a compensatory, you know, pick or a pick that you have, I think I would much rather do that.
All right, last one here, Brian. August 20th, we know the Wooly Bully Top 10. He always has a national whatever day. Today is National Radio Day. Oh. So I'd just like you to say on the record for everyone listening, who is your favorite Maryland-born radio host who hosts
Sean
a show?
Sharif, yeah, without a doubt.
Easy.
Know, without
easy
a doubt.
Money.
Yeah.
The
easy,
man.
Easy,
we don't, I don't need the makeup of Broadus. You need the makeup
we
of Broadus.
We made up last night.
Oh,
we're good.
Oh,
we're good.
Okay.
Yeah, if you watched, we wasted 8 minutes of Love of the Star, like, kissing each other's ass. So, that's something that's 8 minutes you'll never get back. So, just, if you're listening, just go past that first 8 minutes, and then Bobby starts asking legitimate questions.
The man who is dominating our YouTube view count from Oxnard, California.
Brian, I'm cooking a brisket. What do you think?
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you, boys. I'll see you one final time tomorrow, and then we're back in Dallas. But I can't thank you guys enough for everything you've allowed me to do out here, and you guys have a great day.
Thank you so much, YouTube.
Thank you, Brian
Broadus, brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. Enough of being nice. What else did the G-Bag Nation say about the most toxic show at the Fan? Final hour, Tolo Tuesday next.